Welcome to Sacrilegious Discourse.
For this is what the Sovereign Lord says.
Why do you need prophets to tell people who you are and what you want?
If you can justify everything that the God of the Bible has done, then you can justify any of your behavior.
A lot of this mentality is trickling into what is now mainstream right-wing Christianity.
I am capable of empathy greater than this God of the Bible.
This is a Bible that they tell kids. This is the good Lord. This is the good book. He is fantasizing about murder, mass murder.
Head over to sacrilegiousdiscourse.com right now to find out how to leave us a review or support us on Patreon.
Husband.
Wife.
Do you know what we're doing today?
We are doing the second part of our Q&As today.
Mm-hmm.
So we read Matthew chapters 21 and 22,
mm-hmm.
and we found out that we had a fuck ton of questions.
Well, yeah, there was not just a fuck ton of questions, but a fuck ton of
research. Answers
and research, yeah. And things to be said about Matthew chapter 21. That was before I even touched Matthew chapter 22.
Turns out people really care about, you know, Jesus and shit. I mean, you know, who knew? I certainly not us, right? That's not why we're reading this.
Well, I will say, having gone all the way through the Old Testament, I'm sure I could have made our Q&As a lot more in-depth.
Right.
I'm sure that there was enough material for each single chapter to have its own Q&A dedicated episode.
Right.
I did not expect that it would be actually required in the New Testament.
Right. I mean, I feel like we shortened, like, the Old Testament is the Old Testament, right? Like, it didn't feel overly relevant to our lives, right? With regard to what's going on in the world.
Well, it was more literary than historical kind
of
thing.
But the New Testament, I think the biggest problem really with the New Testament is that they keep referencing Old Testament shit.
Right. So before we can even get to the questions, we gotta go back and see what you're quoting and what did they actually mean.
We gotta make sure they're using real facts.
Yeah.
You know, not those alternative facts and whatever. Yeah.
Right.
Because that's a thing in the New Testament, apparently. It's not quite always what they say.
Yeah. It's seldom, even when they're quoting correctly, which, to be fair, usually they're quoting correctly.
Sure.
They're taking out of context.
Very much so.
And trying to apply things to Jesus that were not meant to be applied to Jesus.
Right, right. So there's been a lot of research.
Yeah.
And there's been a lot of Q&As.
Yes.
But specifically today, we're going to be getting into which one?
Little Maddie, chapter 22.
All right, let's do this.
Okie dokie. All right, Little Maddie, chapter 22, is a stupid chapter, and
it... There you go, we're done, that's it.
I mean, that could be said of most of these.
Right.
It's about Jesus answering and asking some difficult questions, okay?
Yeah.
It's all confrontation,
right.
The whole chapter, and we start off with the parable of the wedding. Do you remember this? The king is setting up a banquet for the wedding of his son, and he sends out three different sets of invitations.
And no one comes, right?
They come, but they, like, kill the messengers.
Right.
Yeah. It's so stupid.
It is.
It's even more stupid when you understand actually what it's about, which we were like, what the fuck is this?
I've noticed a little bit of a theme, right? Like, because the last time there was the vineyard and they killed the messengers, and now we're killing messengers for the wedding. Like, there's a lot of killing of them. The messengers get killed all the fucking time,
well,
apparently.
Because Jesus keeps telling the same story over and over, which is that God is giving you an invitation to join him, and instead of accepting the invitation, whatever it may be, people, atheists, secular people, heathens, pagans, pieces of shit, garbage humans who aren't Christian.
Yeah.
They turn down the invitation and they kill Jesus and his followers.
I just
love to eat the babies or whatever.
I never realized how religious the statement "Don't kill the messenger" was.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, this is, it's very much geared, it's taken from this.
Right.
It's just overwhelming how much he's throwing this out there before he's even died.
Right.
You know, or any of his apostles.
Right.
I'm like, none of y'all have died, but you keep saying, you keep setting this, because you know what's going to happen, because we're writing about this after you died.
Yeah.
And it's not you that's saying it, it's somebody else, because you're setting this up as a story that's supposed to, like, wow us that you know all this shit.
Exactly. All right. So we start with verses 1 and 2. Jesus spoke to them again in parables, them being all the
masses that follow
the naysayers, the Pharisees for the most part,
or whatever. Yeah.
Saying the kingdom of heaven is like a king who prepared a wedding banquet for his son, or a feast of inauguration, which is when his son is put in possession of the government. Okay. And thus he and his new subjects become married together, is a way that you could kind of view this in a very symbolic sense.
Sure.
And you could look at the book of First Kings to see where such a feast is mentioned.
Yeah.
To kind of get a sense of what he's quoting from or what he's pulling from. Things that would be familiar, like before we did the vineyard, because that was familiar to the working class.
Right.
So now we're doing wedding, because that also is something that is very important that they would understand what he's getting at.
Right.
And in this sense, the king, of course, is God. His son, of course, is Jesus.
Right.
The marriage is the incarnation of God in human nature. So okay. It's the marriage of the heavenly and the earthly.
Okay.
Okay. The marriage feast is the gospel, which is, you know, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the people preparing the words, whatever.
Okay.
During which men are invited to partake of the heavenly offer.
This sounds right? like a very Christian take, wherever you this got this information from. This is a
very
from.
Christian like, take.
Not that it wouldn't be, because we're reading the Christian version of right. the Bible right now. We're reading right. the New Testament. But I mean, like, you're saying this, it's very blind to Old Testament, right?
Like,
this is not...
They use the Old Testament as a tool, but not as a, they use it as a cudgel rather than as part of the story.
Yeah.
And it's very insensitive and insulting.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. No, they went out of their way to not be old line Jewish, whatever.
You know, here, like, we're quoting your book at you, and you're turning it down. You fucking doing it wrong, Jewish people, is what Jesus is saying.
Right, but it's literally Jesus doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Like, it's literally this group of people.
Yeah.
I'm not even, like, let's just remove Jesus from the equation here, because really you're talking about a different sect of Judaism, mm-hmm. hypothetically.
Yeah.
That is basically disowning Judaism mm-hmm. and saying, fuck y'all, we're going a different direction.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they get mad at them for not following them, when it's like, well, wait, we have this whole religion thing.
You threw Yahweh in the trash, and we've been following mm-hmm. him for ages, and he's really excited to smote people, and we don't want to get right. smoted.
And then they're like, who the fuck do you think you are? And then he's like, Jesus. And they're like, oh. Really?
Oh,
you think okay. you think okay? You,
we'll take care of that
son,
problem.
Son of God, huh? Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll see how that works out
right,
for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the invitees, the people being invited, are the Jews.
Okay.
And the servants are the first preachers of the gospel, including John the Baptist and the disciples of Jesus. Okay. And then the other servants are the rest of the apostles. They're the servants, the ones that go forth, the messengers.
Got it.
Okay.
Got it. But so far, the only one I've heard about that has died is John the Baptist in that list of things you mentioned.
Right.
Which doesn't really, in my opinion, doesn't really count. And hear me out here, because I feel like John the Baptist was not really Jesus's people. John the Baptist feels like he was there prior to Jesus.
Oh, he was.
And he was the precursor to Jesus.
He was.
And that, led the way for Jesus. So
that, I mean, everything you're saying is not
new. Yeah.
I'm not really sure why you're...
No, I'm just saying
that... It feels like, because it was. No,
what I'm saying is that he's not really one of the disciples or apostles. He's something else. And none of the disciples or apostles, as of yet, have we heard of any of them dying. We know Jesus is going to die.
Right.
But we haven't heard of any of these messengers getting killed.
No, that's true. That's true. So then we move on to the second invitation. So first, nobody shows up and the king gets really fucking pissed, sure. Right? Okay, so then the second invitation gets refused, right?
Okay.
And the king's banquet parable, what's interesting historically is that the king's banquet parable assumes a two-stage invitation system. So people would get invited, and first the guests would RSVP in advance to the wedding, right? Sure. And then when the feast is actually ready, the servants would go out and say, hey, everything's prepared. Come on now.
Okay.
So that means that the guests weren't just declining a surprise invitation that came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
They were backing out after having already agreed to come.
Oh, so this is like indicative of like them accepting the covenant from God. Mm-hmm. And then they back out later and like, fuck you,
yeah.
God.
Yeah.
Which was talked about a lot in the Old Testament.
Yes.
So that tracks, but it's also the way that they're invoking this is not.
It's very disingenuous.
Right.
And it's what I was saying, where Jesus is using the Old Testament as a cudgel.
Yeah.
And he's not doing it fairly.
Right.
The backing out after they already agree to come would have been a major public insult to the host. And so using that as a parable, it fits Jesus's like style. Like it fits his story.
He's creating all these, the parables are to preach this to the layman.
Yes.
Right? Like so that everybody can understand the message that he's trying to get across.
Yes. Yes. So then we get to verse 7. The king was enraged. He sent his army and destroyed those murderers and burned their city. And remember me and you were like, holy shit, that escalated quickly. That's horrendous.
Right.
Because the king here is God, and God is like, come to my party and you say no, I will kill you all, motherfuckers.
I mean, they did hypothetically kill his messengers. So
yeah, yeah.
I mean, I understand maybe... But you know what though? No, it's God.
It's God.
You
should be more mature and get over it.
Right. And you hypothetically could have already known that they were gonna do this.
Right.
Which you did.
Right.
If you're God.
If you're God. Yeah.
As said in the Bible anyway. Because
You're supposed to know everything.
Right. You know men's hearts and you know all these things.
What's interesting is this particular verse is one of the most obvious clues for historians that the book of Matthew was very obviously written after 70 CE. Because in the story, the king sends troops, kills the murderers, and burns their city.
Yeah.
And that detail is very odd in a wedding story, but is eerily similar to what the Romans did to Jerusalem in 70 CE. After crushing the Jewish revolt.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
So most scholars think that Matthew, the book thereof, is retroactively reading that catastrophe into Jesus's parable as divine judgment.
Okay.
Yeah. So, like, that's a thing that happened, and then Jesus... Or Matthew was trying to say that Jesus is saying, oh, this happened back then.
Tell us this isn't Jesus's word without telling us this isn't Jesus's word.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So I thought that was super interesting. I didn't realize that happened. But that's what the whole I'm going to burn your city. That's not a parable. That actually fucking happened.
Got it.
And it's a, yeah, you had it coming. You turned down God's invitation.
Right.
Gross. So then there's the third invitation. And Christians see it as the invitation that the Jews refused went to the Gentiles instead.
Okay.
So, you know, and we've seen that before where the Christians think that that's what the first will be last and the last will be first.
Yeah.
Which is just where the birth of anti-Semitism is born.
Yeah, it's a lot more nefarious than I would have ever thought was actually in there.
It's grotesque.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not about it.
And I always want, so I never really understood fully where anti-Semitism sprung from.
Right.
Yeah, I was just like, why are Christians
so hateful against Jews?
Right.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and now I'm starting to see, oh, this is pretty, like, this can be twisted into a version that is really bad.
It doesn't even have to be twisted.
No,
it literally is, you guys are doing your religion wrong, and now we will kill you for it.
Right. No, you're right. It doesn't have to be twisted, but this is where it comes from. Anti-Semitism is Christianity.
Yes.
Essentially.
Yes. I didn't know, because I didn't know enough about the history of Judaism. And then, of course, I didn't know or understand how Christianity sprang from Judaism.
Right. And it to me, it was always like, you know, Israel and Christianity were kind of like together.
Like, you guys are a club, right? Like, you guys sprung from the same roots, but no.
Right.
No.
I always imagined it as a friendly relationship. But,
right.
And I'm not trying to take away from the fact that there are groups that are friendly.
There are groups that are friendly, but the religions as a whole are not friendly.
Right. And this, what we've been reading, is not friendly.
No, not at all. This is
anything but friendly.
No, yeah. I mean, this is just, you're doing your religion wrong, and we hate you for it, and we will kill you now.
Yeah.
And we're going to do it this way instead. Right. And I don't understand how anybody could read the history of the two and come away with anything but disgust.
Yeah.
So then we get to the king invites a bunch of people, right?
Sure.
Off the street. Because he's like, fuck all y'all then. I'm just going to invite people off the street.
Yep.
So we're at verses 11 and 12. When the king came in to see the guests, he noticed a man there who was not wearing wedding clothes.
This really made me mad.
We misunderstood this a little bit. It still should make you mad, but we did not understand the full context, which I'm going to provide.
All right.
But the rest of the verses read, he asked, how did you get in here without wedding clothes, friend? The man was speechless. Now, when you and I first read this, we thought, oh my God, so you could get, like, you know, you could say your sorries and take Jesus as your savior and still get up there, but in the afterlife, and God could still be like, nah, and turn you away.
Sure.
Like, we were appalled and we were like, this is horrible. But that's not actually what it was.
Okay.
Not all the people who responded to the invitation were genuine. Some were like the man who thought he would like to go to the feast, but either was too lazy or too busy with his own affairs to prepare himself properly.
Mm.
The king had issued an invitation to all, but he denied entrance to those who wanted to gain the benefits of his feast without changing their self-centered ways. Jesus invited all to enter his kingdom, but there was no place for those who said they believed but showed no change in their attitudes and behavior. Now, that's a very Christian apologist take.
Sure.
But here's the thing. It was a custom among the ancient Greeks to accommodate last minute or unexpected guests with clothing suitable for a marriage feast.
Okay.
So this guy wasn't just poorly dressed and that's why he got turned away.
Sure.
Like, the context is that nice clothing was provided for him and he turned it down and showed up inappropriately dressed.
Okay.
Anyway.
Got it.
And that is something that the people being told this parable at the time would have understood the ramifications. Who would turn that down?
Sure.
And the representation of what that was is, you've been given every opportunity. God is not just inviting you, he's providing every opportunity for you to take whatever, right?
Okay.
So it's not just you could repent, take Jesus as your savior, what the fuck ever, and still be turned down as we took it.
Sure. This person wasn't repenting. They were
right.
rejecting.
Yes.
Even though trying to attend.
Yes.
That's the message that they're trying to convey.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's why he was then murdered instead.
Right.
Which is not like, oh, hold on. Now,
that's not friendly.
No, that's not a God I want to worship.
Yeah.
Yikes. Yeah. You know, and something else that I wanted to bring up here is at the ARC encounter that we attended the protest for recently.
Yeah.
Not at that, but I saw some of the conversations about it online afterward.
Sure.
One of the questions that atheists like us would ask, why would you want to worship a God who does these things? He's murderous. He condones rape and slavery. He's all for genocide and torture, and he's just a horrible thing.
Yeah.
And why would you want to worship that kind of God, right? And the answer that Christians always give 100% across the board is, it's not ours to judge his morality.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? They're like, we're not choosing to worship him because he's moral or because he's ethical or just. He is God. He gets to decide. And I like that answer literally astounded me.
Right. No, but it is theirs apparently to judge our morality.
Mm-hmm.
Like they judge other people's morality sure. all the time.
Sure.
Right. So they interpret the messages that they think they're hearing from God
mm-hmm.
and then choose to judge other human beings, but yet they refuse to judge their God.
Well, yeah.
Such a fucking double standard.
Well, no, you can't judge God. God is God. like, that's their answer. God is God. Why would I judge? He is the very image of morality or not morality, and it's not mine to question. And I worship him because he's God, not because he's moral. And I'm just like, what?
Yeah.
Like, you're trying to win me over, and I am a person who values ethics and good judgment and fairness and equality, and you're telling me to throw goodness out the window?
Now, to be fair, usually you're going to get that answer from them once you have backed them into a corner on something about morality, about God's morality specifically,
mm-hmm.
right? Like you're going to bring up, it's specifically because we were at the ARC Encounter protest, right? A lot of the times, especially with that story, you're talking about bringing up the fact that God committed genocide,
mm-hmm.
right? God killed every living thing
mm-hmm.
other than what was on that ARC on the planet.
Sure.
To
start
punish
over.
Humanity. But he didn't just punish humanity, he punished all living beings that mm-hmm. were on this planet and yeah. all living things
mm-hmm.
that were on this planet, you know?
And that's not the first time or the last time that he let babies get killed.
Right, right. So, I mean, when people say it's not for them to judge God's morality, that's them saying, I don't fucking know and I don't have the answer to that, so shut the fuck up.
And I don't fucking care.
Right.
And that's the problem I have.
Well, and that's why you're never going to... Most people who are adamantly Christian, unless they find it from their own digging, from their own something that they...
Their own curiosity.
That bothers them, right? And you never yeah. know what that thing is going to be that bothers them, right? But unless they find it for themselves, they're never going to find their way out of this indoctrination that they've built around themselves their entire lives.
Right.
You know, like it was built for them at first by their parents or whatever, but like they have enveloped themselves in this little bubble of Christianity, and most of them, a lot of them, don't want to leave it because it provides them a community. It provides them answers for things that they no longer have to think about, right?
Sure.
Like they don't have to worry about what's going to happen when they die. They don't have to worry about whether what is right and wrong. These things are all taken care of for them in the Bible and through church, right? It's just less that they have to deal with regard to philosophy and just generally thinking. Like, you don't have to think as much.
I get that. I just, the idea that they're like, throw morality and goodness out the window because whatever you think is goodness and morality is wrong. And God will fix it for you. God will tell you what it is.
Yeah, but I still think that it's just they don't have an answer. And that's a no answer answer.
Right. And that's not going to convince me to join their team is what
no.
I'm saying.
Fuck no.
Right. Yeah. I'm like, no, I'm sorry. I have morals.
Yeah. And most, a lot of the atheists that I have met pretty much almost all agree that, you know, even if God were real, I'm not worshiping this fucker.
No, he's a dick. He's
an evil son of a bitch who has done some really terrible things to humanity and people and just across the board. He's not good.
Not good.
Like we've read this whole book up until like we're now in the New Testament. And there's not anywhere in the book where I could say, yeah, he's a really good God right there.
I would follow that guy.
There might be a couple instances for a moment where you could be like, it wasn't so bad. But that's about the most you can say. Right. That wasn't so bad.
Right.
Followed up by, shit, that was fucking terrible.
Mm-hmm. So now we're at verse 14. For many are invited, but few are chosen.
Yeah.
This alludes to the Roman custom of raising their militia. How they raised their armies is they would muster every man of age.
Sure.
So like age 12, I believe, is when the kids were like considered old enough to be men to go to war, right?
Okay.
And then only those who were found proper would be chosen to actually serve in the army.
Got it.
And so that's what that is directly referencing. For many are invited, but few are chosen. And what that also reminds me of is the Marine motto, the few, the proud, the Marines. Like, it's very similar. Like, you could see where the Marines got their cute little motto from.
Right, right.
Yeah. So, all right. Then we move on to verses 15, 16, and 17, where the Pharisees come up and they ask Jesus a problematic question.
Yeah.
Okay. Then the Pharisees went out and laid plans to trap him, Jesus, in his words. They sent their disciples to him along with the Herodians, which I'll tell you about in a minute.
Okay.
Teacher, they said, we know that you are a man of integrity and that you teach the way of God in accordance with the truth. You aren't swayed by others because you pay no attention to who they are. Tell us then, what is your opinion? Is it right to pay the imperial tax to Caesar or not?
Yeah.
And we were like, what the fuck kind of question is that? Like,
yeah.
Do you pay taxes or don't you? And right. Is it right or good? There's actually some context there that makes that question a lot more meaty and it makes his answer a lot more savvy.
Oh, that makes me sad.
I know. But it is interesting.
Sure.
Okay, but first, who the fuck were the Herodians, right?
Sure.
They were not a religious sect like the Pharisees or the Sadducees.
Okay.
Like, they were not about, the religion of how closely we read the Old Testament and the law, or do we or don't we believe in angels or resurrection? Like, that's not what the Herodians were.
Okay.
They were a political group. They were a group of Jews who, unlike most Jews, were favorable to the rule of the Herods, which, remember, I said Herodians, I bet they're some kind of Herod guys.
Yeah.
And they were.
Okay.
They were. They were therefore indirectly supportive of the rule of Rome. So they were like a political group that was like, yay, Roman leaders, go Herod. We're all about this.
Okay, so this is more like when these people specifically are coming to question Jesus, it's the enemy. It's the like, because the Romans were the occupiers.
Yes. And they're asking about paying taxes.
Right,
They're asking him about paying taxes in front of people who support Rome.
Right.
Yeah. So that's where this gets really interesting.
Yeah, and it sounds to me like they're trying to catch him out so that he gets in trouble.
Yes.
No,
that's specifically what they were doing. So they were supporters of the Herodian dynasty, the family of Herod the Great and his sons who ruled parts of Palestine under Roman authority. And if you'll remember, depending on which of the Herods ruled which section was where Joseph and Mary moved with Jesus when Jesus was a child, right? Jesus grew up knowing about these folks and the Herods and stuff. So he's like prepared.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, being pro-Herod meant also that these guys were very much pro-status quo and thus generally willing to cooperate with Rome. They were a political group, again, more than a theological one, okay?
Okay.
Now, the Pharisees, meanwhile, were primarily religious teachers. Normally, the Pharisees and the Herodians, they weren't natural allies because they weren't even running in the same circles, really. But Jesus had become enough of a problem that kind of the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Sure.
And the two groups were willing to cooperate in an attempt to trap Jesus, as you said, to get him in trouble.
Right.
Are taxes good or aren't they? Do you pay your taxes or don't you?
Right.
But the question wasn't just about paying taxes.
Okay.
The imperial tax is what the question was. Is it right to pay the imperial tax to Caesar or not? The imperial tax was a special tax levied on subject peoples, not on Roman citizens.
Okay.
So the Herodians ask whether it's religiously proper to pay taxes to Caesar, and Jesus has two obvious bad answers. Whichever way he goes is going to be wrong.
Yeah.
If he says, of course we pay taxes, pay the taxes. Most ordinary Jews that are standing there listening would hate him, right? Because they're like,
they don't like the tax collectors.
Fuck taxes, fuck tax collectors, fuck Rome, fuck Caesar, fuck all of this, right? The Roman poll tax was deeply unpopular, as it would be. And so nationalists would hear Jesus supports Roman occupation. Fuck this guy.
Yeah.
Right? But if he says, don't pay the taxes, now the Herodians would have exactly what they need to arrest him immediately because he's being, you know, he's opposing law, right? Yeah.
He's like, I don't pay taxes.
Yeah. So they could report him to Rome for encouraging a tax rebellion.
Yeah.
And Rome did not appreciate tax revolts.
Sure.
Okay. So they were basically asking Jesus, hey, are you committing treason? Please mark yes or no in the box. Right.
So Jesus had to walk a fine line.
Yeah, and that's why he got clever, okay? He gives an answer, and we were like, what kind of answer is that?
Yeah.
Give to God what belongs to God and to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, pay your taxes and tithe.
No, I mean, essentially, deal. I think that's still kind of what it's saying, but...
But there's still more, though. I haven't actually reached the part that is important.
Okay. All right.
So his answer is... Yeah, pay your taxes. Mm-hmm. The government has legitimate authority over civic matters. Duh. Okay?
Sure.
Caesar gets the coins. God gets everything else. Humans bear God's image per Genesis 1, while the coins bear Caesar's image. And that's where we start to get into it a little bit.
Okay.
The coin belongs to Caesar. The people belong to God. Let each go their separate ways and accordingly, right?
Sure.
Everybody follow the rules that you're supposed to follow.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's give Caesar his, give God his. It's fine. Everybody's fine. Everything's fine. It's also an example of subtle anti-imperial satire. Jesus is minimizing Caesar here by basically saying, fine, take your stupid little fucking coins. God owns the universe. No bigs. It's fine. This is fine. Side note, this is the part that's interesting.
Okay.
The tax coin itself, the imperial tax coin, was a denarius bearing the emperor's image, as I said, and an inscription presenting Caesar in divine terms. So using or even carrying a coin raised concerns for many Jews because of its idolatrous imagery.
Oh, wow.
That actually makes the question even deeper, and it makes his response even smarter.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm like really impressed with this exchange. This exchange here, I'm like, okay, all right, okay.
No, I can see how in the moment with regard to how the situation was on the streets with Rome and everything else, and mm-hmm. and the tensions in Judaism at the time, right? Like mm-hmm. there's a lot of things going on in this time frame.
Oh yeah.
Right. And I can see how in that moment, in that time, in that place, mm-hmm. that statement was genius and mm-hmm. did and said just the exact right thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, that being said, as much as I can appreciate that historically and culturally for that time, mm-hmm. I still don't think it's a grandiose statement of like religious significance. It doesn't strike me as something that still should be revered as a great statement, other than it was clever to walk that line and admit.
That's what I'm taking from it.
Right. Yeah.
I don't understand why most people think that that's a great.
Because it's still one of those statements, like it's a big statement from Jesus, the unto Caesar and all the things,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like that is definitely one of the, and I feel like it's just one of those things that people keep passing on as a great statement because it's been told to them that it was a great statement and yeah. has been for thousands of years.
Sure. You know?
Because at the time it was.
Right.
At the time
and without,
it was.
Without understanding why though.
Right.
And I'm like, no, actually it's not that big of a deal until you understand. And then you're like, damn, Jesus actually did bring the burn, but not because you said he did.
No, I think that pretty much defines Christianity, the quote unquote, without understanding.
Yes.
That you could define Christians in general, and it's just without understanding. They don't care, as you said earlier. They don't want to know. Generally, the people that care are nicer and or atheists by the time they're done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that. Mm-hmm. That's people that don't care take the word of their preacher, their pastor, their whatever.
Lacking curiosity to further yeah. understand any little bit of it.
Right. And there are Christians that do care. Like, and we know some.
Yes, we do.
Right. And they care very much to the point that they want to understand all of these things mm-hmm. in order to better form their opinions about their faith.
Right. Right.
But the ones that don't care, don't care.
Right.
They just don't care, and they will fight you to prove how much they don't care.
Right.
You know?
And they want you to not care with them. And
right,
I'm like,
yeah.
But that's not how I work.
But you
bro.
Just have to have faith, you know? You just have to have God in your heart, you know?
That's like telling to me, that's tantamount to telling a depressed person, just cheer up. And it's like, I hear you, and that sounds like something I would like to do. What are the steps involved in that? Like, what does one do in order to just cheer up or just have faith? Just have right. a feeling.
No,
like, you can't make a feeling be there.
Right. When someone tells me you just have to have faith, it's one of the most insulting things people can say to me. I'm
yeah.
like, what the fuck do you even mean by that? That is so, like, you are speaking from a point of view where you've never once probably questioned your faith unless it was a really dark moment for yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
But generally speaking, you have been in a point in your life where you have never actually questioned your faith. I, on the other hand, have never had faith.
Right.
And even at times, because of how I grew up and where I grew up, mm-hmm. I asked for it.
I wished it would have been easier
right.
many times.
And most Christians,
quote unquote, just have faith.
Most Christians never had to ask for it or want it.
Right.
You know, I did, and I could never find it.
Right.
So that's when it comes down to like the anger against Christianity at some level personally. Like I do have some because I grew up in a small town that was very Christian mm-hmm. and I was the outcast to some degree, not completely.
Right.
Like I got along.
But you know? Understood that you, even if you weren't treated like an outcast, you understood that everybody belonged to this thing that you did not belong
yeah.
to.
You don't have the same, you don't have equal footing in a place like that if you aren't part of the club.
Right.
You know? And it was, it wasn't traumatic, but it wasn't far from traumatic with regard to how that affects a child growing up in those areas.
Right.
Because it's, you're just, you don't have the same starting block as everybody else.
Right.
You know? So I don't know. I don't know where I was going with that. It's just like, but when people say just have faith, it just really pisses me off.
No, that's totally all. Same. No, I just thought this particular exchange was one of the few times when I was like impressed with the question as well as the answer.
Yeah.
And that has not been the case thus far.
With regard to the seed unto Caesar and all the, yeah.
Yes.
Just because we kind of made a big loop there.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So it did not by any means bring me over to Jesus's side. It was just merely one exchange of in conversation that I can appreciate from a very literary context.
I appreciate this, the context that you gave makes it a little bit more than what it was, mm-hmm. but I don't give it anything more with regard to the religious ideas.
No, that same.
Get attributed to it.
No, me neither. Anyway. Me neither. So then we move on and we get the questions from the Sadducees about resurrection.
Yeah.
So we have verses 31 and 32. But about the resurrection of the dead, have you not read what God said to you? I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. He is not the God of the dead, but of the living. And we were like, I don't even know what you're saying there.
Right.
What does that even mean?
Yeah.
So when he says, have you not read what God said to you? Let's do that first. Okay. Sure. That comes from Exodus chapter 3, verse 6, where he says, then he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. At this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God.
Sure.
Okay. So Jesus notices that God doesn't say, I was their God. He says, I am their God, like a present tense thing.
Okay.
And hang with me here, because I know that that sounds like really weak sauce, okay, to hang everything on the tense of a verb.
Sure.
I'm right there with you. Just hang with me.
Okay.
Okay. I saw your face and I knew because I had the same, like, what the fuck ever. Okay. What Jesus is saying here, though, is if God still identifies himself even now as their God, then Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob must somehow still live before God. Now, this thin argument, the verb tense,
yeah.
Okay, it only works because Jesus is arguing within the interpretive methods extremely common among first century Jewish teachers. So he was not being a weird smart mouth here.
Right.
He was not like twisting tenses just to make a point.
This was an idea that was percolating out there in the world.
It not necessarily an idea, but a methodology.
Okay.
Using words this sure. way.
Okay.
And making it lean on something like as simple as a verb tense was not cheating. It wasn't considered verbal cheating.
Well, it just goes back. Like, it reminds me very much of how pastors today will cherry pick using small little snippets of verse
mm-hmm.
to create a message that they want to create. It has sure. nothing to do with what was actually in the Bible. They want to create a whole sermon about one fucking sentence from a Bible without giving any context to what surrounds it.
Yeah. You know? No, it totally true. I will say that when the Jewish people do it, it
yeah.
seems to make a little bit more sense historically because of where they're pulling from and what they're trying to say.
Sure.
And because they leave room to question each other.
Right.
And discuss it.
Unless you're Jesus.
Right. Because I don't care what you say. This Jesus guy, I know that this is supposed to be just another sect of Judaism.
Yeah.
I cannot make it work in my head because he was such a fucking powder keg.
Yeah.
Like, I cannot. He's not the same.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
He's already pulling away from Judaism as we know it.
Right.
And doing his own fucking thing.
Yeah.
But what he was doing here verbally was not weird or considered verbal cheating.
Okay.
It was very common among first century Jewish teachers where even the tense of a verb could carry theological weight.
Sure.
And it's not a modern logical proof so much as a rabbinic style of argument that they still do to this day.
Sure. And I could see in a place where you are trying to sort out your religion. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like you're asking questions, you're debating your religion. I could see where that would be a helpful tactic if everybody involved is engaging with good intentions. Right.
Right. And so. I think that's what makes all the difference. The good intentions, we all have a common goal because we're trying to reach understanding for each other and for a group and for ourselves individually. And that's not necessarily what you see done today, nor do I think that that's always what Jesus was doing, but it was and is common among Jewish rabbis.
Well, where Christianity differs very much from what Judaism seems to be, even now, even in the present, right? And definitely in the past. Christianity leaves no room for questioning.
You're not supposed to question at all.
Right. And what you're not supposed to question differs per each sect of Christianity as well.
But for the most part, it's don't question anything.
Right.
You're safest if you just don't question anything.
Yeah. But there's definitely different things that mean more to whatever group you're a part of.
Sure. Traditional Christian interpretation indicates that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are alive with God and that death doesn't end the covenant. Okay, that's, again, a traditional Christian interpretation.
Okay.
Jewish interpreters likewise see it as affirming that the patriarchs remain alive before God and that God's covenant with them continues beyond death. So there is some agreement between the two, though...
I would argue that probably the Jewish version of how it lives on it is very different than the version that Christians have.
Very much.
And because in my opinion, and I could be way off base with this, I probably am, but a lot of the talk in the Old Testament with regard to ideas living on were generational ideas, right?
Yes. Like
they lived on through generations, not necessarily through a dead person still being alive, right?
Yes.
And they cared very much about the hierarchy of a family, like you're this person's son, that person's whatever.
Right.
Right. So those ideas, and you got punished for people from the past in your family. So these ideas that things lived on felt more of a generational thing to me in the Old Testament.
No, definitely. But on a more personal level, one of the ways that they kept them alive and said that they were alive is that many times they would save a space for Elijah at the dinner table.
Sure. And I'm not saying they were against, you know, thinking that a dead person was still out there somewhere. Like that was...
But here's the thing, though. They didn't necessarily believe this guy is alive and might actually come sit at our table.
Yeah.
Like...
It's the equivalent of pouring out a beer for somebody that, you know, awake.
Symbolic. Or, you know, like it's a symbolic... gesture.
Right.
I wouldn't even call it an empty gesture because you're still going through the motion, but you're also taking a thought as you do it.
No one's actually expecting Elijah to show up.
Right. Exactly. All right. So then we move on and we get the question from a lawyer among the Pharisees about which is the greatest commandment. Do you remember which is the greatest commandment?
I do not.
It's love.
That's right.
Love the Lord and love your neighbors as you love yourself.
That's right. Yeah.
Love.
Okay.
Which is way too woke for Christians.
Yeah.
Which is funny to me.
Right, because honestly, Matthew is not woke.
No, at all. I'm like, yo. Okay, so I have such mixed emotions because I'm like, on the one hand, some of y'all need to read your fucking book better and understand that this is not what you think it is. But then again, I'm also like, some of you are so fucking hateful. Yes, please don't read your book to understand how hateful it is because you don't need any help
right.
being more hateful than you already fucking are.
I think that there's so much in just in Matthew, right? And we could go on about this for ages, but you could take any number of ideas as to what your beliefs would be from just this book that it's kind of absurd.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like you could go any direction you want. Jesus just keeps kind of fucking spaghetti on the wall in different parables and different ideas and different mm-hmm. things. And it's just like, okay, what do you actually fucking stand for? Like, I think that's the biggest problem I'm having with this book is I really am having a hard time grasping what Jesus actually stands for.
No, same, because he's like, take my hand and believe the resurrection that hasn't happened yet. And I'm like, that's weird. Why are you like fighting for them to believe in a thing that hasn't happened yet?
Right.
And mad at them that they're like, I don't know, dog, that doesn't track.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. The whole thing is just very weird.
Yeah.
Then we get to verses 37, 38, 39, and 40.
Okay.
Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. And those come from a variety of places. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 4 and 5. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. Okay, and then Leviticus chapter 19, verse 18. Do not seek revenge or bear a grudge against anyone among your people, but love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord.
Remember when I used to see?
So, I mean, that answers that. Love.
Right.
Okay. Don't see a lot of that going around. And then Jesus asks a question of his opponents about David's son, and he confounds them. And that's verses 43, 44, and 45. He said to them, how is it then that David, speaking by the Spirit, calls him Lord? For he said, the Lord said to my Lord, sit at my right hand until I put your enemies under your feet. If then David calls him Lord, how can he be his son? Because remember, he was like asking them, so who do you think Christ is? Is Christ like the son of David or something?
Yeah.
And we were like, what? And what he's trying to get at here is David refers to the coming Messiah someday as Lord, yet he is the son of David. So, well, you know, through generations.
Right.
So he's like, isn't it magical that he's like my great great grandfather and he's calling me Lord? That's so cool, right? Right?
Oh my God. The narcissism involved in that statement is next level.
He's not just David's son, he's also David's Lord.
I know.
Isn't that cute?
I'm really having a hard time with this whole Jesus is just proclaiming he is the son of God thing.
I'm totally the son of God and also descended from David. I'm just like,
but it started off as a secret, you know, like
don't tell anybody.
Don't tell anybody.
Yeah.
Which I the whole progression of that so quickly.
Yeah.
Is just comical to me.
So I don't know if you caught, though, there was a part two where he said, I put your enemies under your feet. That is a reference to Psalm 110, verse 1. The Lord says to my Lord, sit at my right hand until I make your enemies a footstool for your feet. And then even that refers back to when God said that the earth is his footstool.
Oh, wow. I remember
that. Do you remember that? And we were like appalled, like, geez, you just put your feet up on us. Right. Like, what?
How innocent we were back then.
I know. Like, can we just go back to the days when God was like, you fucking worms. Never not be afraid, you fucking worms.
I mean, Genesis seems like a fucking just dream. Like, Genesis is where this whole thing began, right? And there was a lot of terrible shit. Like, It has gotten so much worse.
It's the more people get involved, the more it's just bad.
I mean, granted, there was the whole Noah genocide thing. That was pretty fucking bad. And there was a lot of bad shit in Genesis. I don't want to say there wasn't, but like, it just doesn't get any better.
It never gets better.
A lot of our friends on Discord have given a shit about this over the time that we've been reading the Bible. They're like, you just don't know yet.
They're like,
and we're just like, what do you mean? And they're like, well, we can't tell you, but you know, like, it's gonna get bad still. It's still bad. The whole fucking thing's bad. And we're like, it can't always be bad, right? New Testament gets better, right?
It's not gonna get like so bad that it's worse than it already is. Right. And they're like, aw, you're so cute. We're like, God damn it. What have we done to ourselves? Why do we do this?
This whole project has made me more baffled as to how this all exists the way it does. Mm-hmm. Because it really relies on like 70% extreme stupidity in the world.
Yeah.
No offense to anybody who's Christian. I don't mean that you're stupid. I just mean like for it to be as prevalent as it is and for people not to pay attention to this as much as they do.
Right.
It really requires a next level
cognitive dissonance,
yeah,
the ability, yeah, to twist your brain pretzel wise.
Right. And look, I am okay. I am okay with people taking this Bible, the New Testament, all the things we've been reading, and under, as long as you are willing to admit it was written by man 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years ago, right? If you can start from that premise, mm-hmm, and then say, okay, but I still think that there are some good ideas in there. There were flaws in the people at the time. I choose to believe in my own version of Jesus and whatever. I can be okay. I don't agree with you.
Right.
I don't agree with you.
But
I can also be okay with that take.
Well, and also if your take isn't, and I'm going to vote against equality for women and the queer community and, you know, wish that there was slavery in place again.
Yeah.
Like, those are all like, nah, dog.
Oddly enough, my view of other people and how who I choose to be around and who I choose to associate with is purely based on my version of what I believe morality to be. Mm-hmm. And those are who I choose to associate with as people who I deem have good values and good morality. Mm-hmm. People always like to say that people being Christians who like to yell at atheists for not having morals, or that we only have morals because God gave us those morals. They love to tell us that we only have morality at all because of God. And
that's so cute.
I beg to differ because he's exactly not like God's idea of morality matches up with literally zero of what my morality is.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
what most of modern society's version of morality is.
Right.
It's just that we refuse to take that and examine that whole process of where that came from and where we got to.
Right.
Morality is ever growing. Like it's based on social conditions and social interactions.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, if we didn't have God, people would just murder each other. I'm like, no, we wouldn't.
I'm sorry. Society does seem to have God. And you know what? They're murdering each other.
Sure, sure. But more than that, though, as we grew as a society because of cooperation.
Right.
Not because we were murdering each other in the fucking streets. We grew as a society because the good behavior got rewarded for propagating our population, propagating our societies, propagating our cities through cooperation. Mm-hmm. And some of that cooperation came from religion at times, depending on what version of history we're in at that period in time, right? Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that God is morality.
Right.
It just means that that is part of that process because it was there when that was evolving.
It happened to be there.
It happened to be there.
It was
a fucking accident, guys.
One might say that it kind of is proof for evolution.
Right. No, and I view morality as an evolution of ideas, you know, mm-hmm, and that's essentially what we have. And, you know, look into mores, look into like there's there's so many things I could tell people that have this idea of black and white morality through God to look into that could completely change their idea of what morality means, but they'll never look into it.
No, you'd have to read the philosophers and you'd have to study ethics and you'd have to study logic and debate and I don't know.
You'd have to give a shit.
Yeah. Yeah. That's you basically
really,
what
really
it,
all it is. It boils have, down to giving a shit.
Have curiosity and empathy.
Yeah, we've covered that so many times. It's like a broken record.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have anything else with regard to this chapter?
Fuck it. But no,
I just realized we're kind of rambling on here about, you know, our grievances against Christianity, and I don't really want to keep going down that road, I guess. So
nope, I'm done with Little Maddie chapter 22.
All right. Thank you all for joining us. We will see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, wife, I guess that's the end?
But husband, that's just sad.
It doesn't have to be. We are on lots of social media platforms like Twitter. Our handle there is sacrilegious_D.
For D's nuts.
Oh my God. Stop doing that. Anyway, we're also on Facebook, Instagram, and Pinterest. There's a link to all of our social media sites at our website.
Ooh, we have a website?
Yeah, it's sacrilegiousdiscourse.com, where you can also find a link to our merch shop.
We have a merch shop?
Yep. We have podcast-themed clothing, mugs, notebooks, and more, as well as an atheist and science-themed products.
Wow, our fans should really go check that out right now.
Definitely. They can get in touch with us by sending an email to sacrilegiousdiscourse@gmail.com. But before they do that, we could really use some help.
Oh yeah? With what?
Well, it's not free running the podcast, and we need some financial support in order to get better equipment, which will free up time so we can concentrate on our podcast and our fans.
Okay, so what should they do?
Head over to patreon.com/sacrilegiousdiscourse and sign up as a contributor on our podcast. Supporters there receive additional bi-weekly episodes that we record just for our Patreon members for as little as $2 a month.
Also, we'd really appreciate it if you would like and subscribe on whatever platform you're using.
And Apple Podcast reviews help us out tremendously.
Like and subscribe. Leave an Apple review. Join us on Twitter. Support us on Patreon. That's a lot of instructions. Don't forget to say thanks.
Thanks.
Okay, bye.